This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped.
Wow, a little jarring. No opening theme song for First Up this morning. What's going on? It's Aaron Korolnik. It's Carlo Kuliak.
That's right.
It's been retired. It's been dethroned by this, apparently, our new intro song. But in any case, welcome to First Up. Korolnik and Kuliakovo with you. And speaking of being dethroned, that's exactly what the Tampa Bay Lightning were last night, losing 2-1 to the Colorado Avalanche. And the Colorado Avalanche are indeed Stanley Cup champions. It was just 5 years ago. They had, what, like 45 points? They were the worst team in the NHL. And then they lose in the second round for three consecutive seasons. People question, do they have the gumption? Are they able to get over the hump? Well, they did exactly that last night. A 16-4 record throughout the course of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And they had quite the celebration in Tampa last night, Coco.
They sure did, AK. And, you know, I couldn't be more happy to see the Colorado Avalanche be crowned as Stanley Cup champions. And for so many reasons. I've got former teammates, close friends, former coaches that are all part of that team right now that, I couldn't be more happy for. You know, the scenes last night, the messages shared last night, the messages that I woke up to this morning from, you know, some of those guys, you know, you really feel for those guys, for everything that they've been through. And you saw the emotions, you know, the emotions going. Oh. And that's what I love about, you know, the Stanley Cup.
It's so good.
Is when you finally see the team win it, you understand the importance and the significance and the lasting impression that it leaves on guys because of how hard it is to win and the investment that is made to win it. Like, everything you heard out of Colorado, you thought that these guys would have been so overwhelmed with excitement that there was nothing that they couldn't say that would, you know, take away from the moment. But almost every guy that you heard get interviewed after that game, all you heard was emotion.
Well, and that there was that, and there was also, for the person sitting at home and watching, I feel like not the same level of emotion, but I'm tearing up sitting on my couch right last night watching Eric Johnson hoist the Stanley Cup and Andrew Cogliano and Nathan MacKinnon 9 years into his NHL career. And we saw him last year speaking after Colorado loses to Vegas and how he says, I haven't done bleep in my career. And he played, by the way, such an incredible game last
Unbelievable.
Night. Unbelievable. Nathan MacKinnon. Holy, did he come up with a massive performance in Game 6. But there's something about seeing the Stanley Cup being handed out and grown men acting like children and just being jubilant beyond words. The ecstasy of winning the Stanley Cup, watching it as a fan.
What a word. Ecstasy. It's true. No, it's true, man. You're absolutely right.
And I'm not a Colorado Avalanche fan. I'm not Luca Celebre from Bartown, you know? Like, I don't care about Colorado, but it was, whether it's Tampa winning the cup or it's Colorado or whoever, you just get these tingles going down your body. And, man, I'm like crying watching the Stanley Cup being handed out every single year. And I can't explain why. It's because I love hockey. I love watching the Stanley Cup playoffs, and this is the culmination. And last night was no exception. I mean, seeing Kadri, and
unbelievable.
Kadri
stole the night.
Well,
he had the mic drop of the night.
Well, you wonder how long he's been cooking this, kind of figuring out if I do indeed win the cup with the Avalanche, and I'm able to come back, which he was. He scored that huge OT winner in Game 4, and then he has the interview on Sportsnet with David Amber and Elliot Friedman, and you knew there was going to be some kind of commentary about his exodus from Toronto, going over to Colorado, how it went down, and basically, I think, I don't know the exact quote. It was,
oh, I'll give you the exact quote.
Give me the exact quote, because something about kissing his ass is for all the haters, essentially.
He basically obviously thanked everybody who stood by him, you know, supported him throughout you know, the things that were said about him. And he said, for everyone that thought I was a liability in the playoffs, you can kiss my ass.
So basically, I don't know if that's like a shot at Dubas.
Oh, that's a shot at Dubas and the Maple Leafs. You don't have to say I don't think but he had the last say, the mic drop moment of the playoffs last night. He made sure that some way, somehow, this came back and reflected the Maple Leafs.
Well, and he also said that he couldn't even tie his own shoes. Remember, he said he broke his skates. Yeah, probably his shoes as well. Yeah. If you can't tie your skates, you can't tie your shoes. But he said he has a broken hand, not a broken thumb, and that's a new revelation as well.
No, it's just a thumb.
He said hand after the game, so maybe I don't know.
Well, the reason why he said hand, I think, is because it was revealed after the game that he broke his thumb. He had multiple breaks in his thumb.
Okay. So a serious injury. We knew that was the case. Can't tie his own skates. Was able to hoist the Stanley Cup just fine. And it's a beautiful thing about the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I mentioned the emotion you get watching all the players celebrate and dance around, and McKinnon like jumping on Eric Johnson like it was an X-rated film after the game. I enjoyed that as well. But think about like the physical investment for Kadri, who has the thumb surgery and can't do anything with his hand, but he's able to score an OT winner. He's able to play 20 minutes in a Stanley Cup playoff game against the two-time defending champions. It's just another in a long story of remarkable athletic achievements for guys overcoming things that very few people can, but that's the beauty of hockey, man. These guys are so incredibly tough. At least some of these guys are so incredibly tough, and Nazem Kadri adds his name to the list.
Yeah, he sure does. And, you know, you saw the outpour of you know, love and the outpour of excitement for Nazem Kadri on social media yesterday. Almost everybody had something to say about him, especially when you saw him hoist that cup. And you know, to go back to his injury, was revealed too, you know, multiple breaks in his thumb, in his hand, whatever you want to describe it as. And the original timeline was somewhere between 6 to 8 weeks. And he was back in just under 3. So you can imagine what this guy had to go through. And this is the beauty about sports, man. The beauty about sports is that sports always writes its own stories. And the story written by the Colorado Avalanche, or completed by the Colorado Avalanche, was absolutely amazing, especially when you start putting a piece of the puzzle together. And there's so much that I've been sort of connected with this Colorado Avalanche team. The St. Louis Blues traded for me because Eric Johnson blew out his ACL in St. Louis. So that's what kickstarted my career in St. Louis with my fresh start away from Toronto. I get to St. Louis. Eric Johnson misses the whole year. I fill in for his spot. I turn my career around. And then Eric Johnson gets traded to the Colorado Avalanche. I remember this trade. We were coming home from our road trip. We landed. It was like 2:30 in the morning. And we were all told that we had just made a blockbuster deal, Eric Johnson and Jay McClement to Colorado for Chris Stewart and Kevin Shattenkirk. And that's what helped kickstart our, path to the playoffs, or
exactly,
path to a President's Trophy team.
For both organizations, too, right?
Both organizations.
Eric Johnson was a number one overall pick. He was a really quality player, still is at age, probably 34, 35 years old. So that is crazy how, but you have connections all over this. I mean, Darren Helm's a former teammate of yours as well. And, you know, a bunch of guys on both sides, both coaching staffs, both management groups. So hockey.
Jared Bednar was the coach of the American League team when I first got to St. Louis. Ray Bennett was the assistant coach, who's the assistant coach of Colorado, assistant coach of mine in St. Louis. He was an unbelievable guy. I'm so happy for him. But going back to Nazem Kadri, when Nazem Kadri got traded by the Maple Leafs, it was a couple months later where I participated in the Marner Invitational. And I remember pulling him aside when we were doing the scrimmage game. And I was talking to him because I was on the ice as like the special guest referee. We were having a good chat and, you know, telling him, you know, how you know happy I am for him to get a fresh start somewhere. And I remember he looked at me and he said, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to make the Maple Leafs pay for trading me. I'm not even kidding. He said that straight
well,
to my face.
If that's not the motivation, the outlook you have, I mean, of course, Nazem Kadri has to feel that way. And he,
yeah.
I mean, I you wonder, he has that thumb surgery. He's like, oh, I'm not letting Dubas have the last laugh here. I'm coming back, and I'm scoring an OT winner. We'll hear from Nazem Kadri on the other side and from Nathan MacKinnon. And maybe a little bit of a voyage into the minds and psyche of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who deserve a lot of credit this morning as well. I mean, think about the injury they had to Braden Point in the first round against the Leafs and overcoming that 3-2 deficit there. And they were down 2-0 to the Rangers, and they could have easily folded against Colorado in the Cup Final, but they did nothing of the sort. And another fantastic season from the Tampa Bay Lightning as well. It's Monday morning. You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050. We'll be back after this.
2 seconds. 1 second. It's over. They did it. They did it. The job is done. The Colorado Avalanche are Stanley Cup champions. And they will lift Lord Stanley a mile high. Ladies and gentlemen, the cup is coming back to Colorado.
Wow. Dude, I was just waiting for the line. I was just waiting for the line. You don't have to go home. But you can't stay here.
Well, that's Connor McGahee, the play-by-play voice of the Colorado Avalanche, and a friend of the show. We had him last week, and I remember I asked him, like, do you have anything cooking as far as, you know, a final call, if and when Colorado wins? He's like, no. I call BS on that. They will lift the cup a mile high. That's something you planned before. That's a great line.
Absolutely.
I'm not trying to, you know, rain on the parade for Connor McGahee, but there is no way you come up with something of that quality on the spot. That's a great call, and we shouldn't be surprised because that man is a fantastic broadcaster, and he's much in line with the rest of the Colorado Avalanche organization, top to bottom. I mean, talk about Joe Sakic, the general manager who made so many astute moves leading up to the trade deadline, bringing in Josh Manson from Anaheim, Cogliano, Arturi Lehkonen, who scores yet another massive goal in the playoffs. This guy is a machine when it comes to big moments. Very few do it better.
Well, he scored the series clinching goal against the Edmonton Oilers in overtime.
Yeah, and think he back scores last year with Montreal.
And he scores the Stanley Cup winning goal.
That guy's about to get a nice payday for in free agency, and
but
I think
you talk about you just mentioned the moves that Joe Sakic made at the deadline. Like these moves are not your A-list sort of moves that you would, you know,
like Claude Giroux, for instance.
Yeah, like these were all specific moves that allow the Avalanche to bring in certain type of players. I mean, I don't think I heard the name Andrew Cogliano not mentioned by any player that was interviewed after the game.
They love Cogliano in Colorado.
This guy was there for 4 months. And every player on that team that was interviewed after the game made sure that somewhere in their answer they mentioned the impact that a guy like Andrew Cogliano had on them getting to win the Stanley Cup. It was incredible. Like, every player was like, this moment's unbelievable. We have such a great team, but you really feel happy. You know, we did it for guys like Cogs, like EJ, like Jack Johnson, you know, like Josh Manson. These guys were integral with our team and our maturity in the locker room. I think it was Cale Makar or Landeskog. Somebody was saying that in the between Game 5 and Game 6, Cogliano called a team meeting with the Colorado Avalanche after they lost on home ice, which Friday night I couldn't believe Colorado didn't close it. Like, I was at a party, unbelievable party. It was a pink party, actually. I actually had a lot of fun with it, my buddies. And I was watching the game from a side, and to see the gutsy effort that Tampa Bay put through to win that game. you could see how you could lose your focus or get too emotionally, distracted from the task at hand. But to hear guys say that it was Andrew Cogliano, not Landeskog, not McKinnon, not the guys that have been there for years. It was Andrew Cogliano, a guy that was there for just 4 months, that called a team meeting to calm everybody down and made sure that they were still focused on the task at hand. I'm so happy for a guy like Cogs. I know him really well. He's a good friend of mine. And to see
him... A party invite for you? What do you think?
I better get one.
Oh, going to cup party is the best.
But here's the thing. This is a guy who's played 1,140 games in the NHL and finally got to host the Stanley Cup yesterday. Unbelievable. Actually, it's so... When this moment finally happens, it's all about reflecting. And when you reflect some of the things that you saw last night, you really feel happy that Colorado was a team that was the best team all season. They put the work in the playoffs, and they deserve to be Stanley Cup champions. And, so, and this is
yep.
This is this is no shot at Tampa Bay, because what they did was incredible too. And to hear, I can't wait to hear some of the revelations we hear over the next couple of days of some of the injuries that these guys were suffering, because Cooper made a point last night to say that if this was in the middle of the season, half of our American Hockey League team would have been up. Like, this is what some of the guys were playing through to get to this point.
And that would apply to Colorado, too. I mean, Colorado's dealing with their own injuries as well. I'm sure Nichushkin's got some kind of, I don't know, high ankle sprain or something. And we know
Burakovsky apparently was playing with a broken ankle and broken foot. And it happened in the Edmonton series.
Man, it's crazy. It's crazy. And I think it's pretty fair to say that Cale Makar was unencumbered by any injury. If he was dealing with anything, didn't look like it. He wins the Conn Smythe Trophy as the best player in the playoffs. This after winning the Norris Trophy last week. He becomes the third player in NHL history to win those two trophies in the same year. The other two players, you may have heard of them. Bobby Orr, Nicholas Lidstrom.
Never heard of those guys.
Arguably the two best defensemen of all time. Cale Makar at 23 years old, accomplishing that. I mean, a very, very special postseason, needless to say. And let's hear from Cale Makar, who talked about the legacy building for his Colorado Avalanche.
I mean, it's just been building over time. I feel like for us, I've been here only 3 years and a couple tough exits in playoffs, and it was just all leading up to this.
Unbelievable.
That's exactly it. That's what it is. It's a slow build, right? You can't just go from zero series wins to the Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah. No.
You're not a Stanley Cup contender until you're a playoff contender.
Do you finally believe me?
No, I think the Toronto Maple Leafs were.
Look what Colorado had to go through to win the Stanley Cup, okay? They went through three straight years of losing in the second round of the playoffs to finally get over the hump. And people think that the Maple Leafs are just going to magically put together a season and just run the table and be Stanley Cup champions.
It was quite a gutsy performance.
I hope it happens. And it's so, this is funny how everything reflects back to the Maple Leafs, because after the game, the Stanley Cup odds were revealed for next year, and all of a sudden the Maple Leafs have the second best odds to win it.
Well, it's because the preponderance of money bet on hockey comes from Toronto, so that should be overly surprising. Yeah.
Delusional Maple Leaf fans.
Well, that's
where it comes from.
That's it.
Yeah.
So it was great.
And you heard, I think it was Landeskog, because that guy's, been the captain since 19 years old. Think about that. That guy was named captain at 19
2012. Years old. 2012, okay? Gabriel Landeskog was the captain, yeah.
And I think it was him, he was asked the question, so, what did it take to get to this point? How did you guys have so much success? How were you guys such a juggernaut of a team? And I think he said, well, I encourage every GM out there to go out and find the next Cale Makar, because that's how it started. Like, you need a stud defenseman. Look at the teams that win the Stanley Cup. All of them have stud defensemen. And the Maple Leafs just want to keep drafting undersized forwards.
Okay, all right. So we have at least 3 months to talk about with the Leafs and what they need to do, what they will do. Landeskog. Here is Landeskog and what other teams will take from Colorado's win.
The NHL is notoriously a copycat league. What do you think other teams will take away from your team's journey?
Find a Kale McCarr somewhere.
There you go.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Find
answer.
A Kale McCarr good somewhere.
Good luck finding one of those. Those are like once in a generation type players. And man, McCarr, and I've watched a lot of Colorado games throughout this playoffs. What this guy does around, like just to keep pucks in the offensive zone, it's wizardry. Like so many, you know, but it's like the stick has magnetism towards the puck, and whenever the puck's bouncing or it's, you know, there's a play near the blue line, he always keeps it in. It's unbelievable. And that obviously generates a lot of offensive opportunities for Colorado. Helped him rack up 29 points in 18 games. Yeah. He wins the Conn Smythe Trophy. He wins the North Trophy. And I'm sure he is still up right now drinking champagne and partying it up in the city of Tampa. Winning on the road, I almost feel like it's not better, but it's certainly different in that you're celebrating on the ice and, you have your friends and family in the crowd, whoever's flown down, but not the same. But maybe that's exactly what Colorado needed to get over the hump after playing at home in Game 5 with the opportunity to win the Stanley Cup on home ice. And it was, I think it was, who was it who talked about, maybe it was Mikko Rantanen who said, man, there's a little bit of pressure on us in Game 5, and we just needed to get that out of our system. And you know, they did it. And Colorado was a Stanley Cup champion.
After the win last night, they clinched every series on the road. So maybe this team just needed that road feeling to do it. And look, there's so much other great audio to get into, with Kale McCarr, with MacKinnon, and you know, talking about Sidney Crosby and stuff like that. We'll get through that. We're going to get through all of it because this is a day of reflecting, and it's a good day to reflect because there's a lot that us hockey fans should be thankful for based on the series that we saw. It was one of the best Stanley Cup final series we've seen in a very long time.
Brian Hayes will join us at 7:30, the host of Overdrive. TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger at 8. Coming up next, the Toronto Blue Jays. Tough weekend on the mound for two guys in particular. Yusei Kikuchi has been horrendous of late, and Jose Barrios has an atrocious start yesterday against the Milwaukee Brewers. Should we be ratcheting up the level of concern with 18 games in the next 17 days for the Jays? We'll ask Steve Phillips next. Back here on First Up, it's Monday morning. It's Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. And it was going to be a tough series for the Toronto Blue Jays in Milwaukee, a quality team in the National League. And always becomes a little bit more difficult, Carlo, when you have absolutely brutal performances from your starting pitching. And that applied to both Saturday and Sunday. Yusei Kikuchi, who has been a gas can, to say the least, of late. Not bad, not bad. Not your best work, but not bad. He gets just blown out of the water once again in the first inning, in the second inning, and a very short outing for him. And then on Sunday, it was Jose Barrios who goes out and gets torched himself. Well, doesn't get any easier for the Jays. They've got Boston and Tampa, two of their AL East rivals in town this week, to discuss that and the next steps for the Jays on the mound. Let's welcome in our MLB analyst, Steve Phillips, to the program. Steve, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Good to be with you. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you, Steve, as well. Let's start with Kikuchi. And Charlie Montoyo did not defend Kikuchi like he did Jose Barrios, and that makes sense. Of course, Jose Barrios, a much better track record historically than Yusei Kikuchi does. But, man, Yusei has really been struggling of late, Steve. Can you imagine a world in which he starts this week against the Tampa Bay Rays, or would you kind of sit him down for a while, maybe phantom DL stint?
Yeah, I think they need to figure out something, right? That was one of my thoughts, is come up with a hangnail injury and see if he can't back him off a little bit, start to clear his mind, send him on a rehab start or two, and try to get him fixed up a little bit, just back on track again, because right now as much of it's probably got to be mental as anything else. The other thing that I think they definitely need to do is separate in the rotation. Now, it's going to be hard with balancing off days and everything else, but you can't have Barrios and Kikuchi back-to-back in the rotation. Because you need Manoah to separate the two of them, so that, because what ends up happening, you get a bad outing on Saturday and a bad outing on Sunday, and now you go into a Monday series with your bullpen blown out. And if you separate your starters who are struggling a little bit with a starter who can eat up some innings, then you're not blowing out your bullpen for a week. You know, which is, you know, it's really, they're set up so poorly with their bullpen now because of the usage that they've had to do. Now they got multiple innings worth of work out of some guys, which was positive. But it's really not the best way to have it set up. Now, you know, I understood in the beginning why they did it the way they did, but you know, for Berríos, who's been inconsistent, he's been either really good or really bad, right? It's not really been just mediocre across the board, because mediocre across the board for a starting pitcher, with this offense and a bullpen that if you can at least stay in the game through five innings, you've got a chance to come out of it with some wins. But the peaks and valleys are what you try to avoid. And right now, you know, they've got a lot of that going on, which is why they can't seem to sustain a long run of success. They can't put together the 6, 7, 8 game winning streak, because within that, there's always a clunker. And clunkers, and then back-to-back clunkers, make it really difficult and potentially set you up for, you know, a 5-game losing streak because of what it does to the bullpen.
Well, thank God for Alejandro Kirk in this lineup, because literally, like, he's been the only thing keeping this team going. Their bats have been, you know, quiet for the most part. Their pitching staff is struggling a little bit. But Alejandro Kirk has been, you know, the beast in this lineup. I mean, he hits a 3-run home run last night, giving him 4 home runs and 9 RBIs in his last 5 games. Where would this team be without him right now?
Yeah, no, they'd be in a little trouble. And you mean, remember, we just came off a week where Vlad was player of the week, and not a surprise, Kirk hitting behind him in the lineup. And Tony La Russa, we talked about it last week, making the choice to pitch to Vladdy instead of pitching to Kirk. And Kirk's really gaining a lot of reputation around the league, because when you look at his numbers, you know, walking more than you strike out, and walking a fair amount, more than 10%, really shows a great level of plate discipline, great eye-hand coordination, the ability to hit fastballs and breaking balls. He hits the ball to all fields, and he has great plate presence and discipline, and really is so locked in right now, and it just seems to really always be on top of every pitch. And so you're right, without him, they would have been some trouble. Now the good news is Matt Chapman had a couple of good at bats yesterday, including off a heater ripping a double. And so, you know, you get or getting a double, and then you start to look at maybe you can get some length to the lineup, that it's not just Kirk, because the reality is even the best hitters run into it every once in a while and do have a slump. And so, you know, it's hard to have quality at bats when you're digging yourself out of a hole in a game, because you feel like every out is a lost opportunity and you need to really make up ground. So, you know, they just need better starting pitching. It all always starts there. It affects the at bats. It affects the bullpen. It affects margin for error. It affects the way everybody feels during the course of a game.
They're going to need the starting pitching this week too, Steve. And we're in conversation with our MLB analyst, Steve Phillips, here on First Up, as the Boston Red Sox in town and then the Tampa Bay Rays in town, the two competitors at this point in the American League East, the Jays a game and a half behind Boston, tied with Tampa. Is it fair, or would you call it a stretch, Steve, to look at the next week or so as a potential tipping point in the season for Toronto, considering where they are in the standings and who they're playing?
Well, I think that it's, I certainly understand why you'd look at it that way, considering the schedule and the teams and the divisional rivals and all of it. But this is a good team. The Jays are a really good team. Everybody in the league recognizes, everybody that I talk to on a regular basis in the league recognizes they're a good team. And so, you know, what you can't do as a manager and a general manager is say, boys, this is the critical series, because what if you do lose? You know, does it mean something's over? And it doesn't. And so they need to regroup. They need to get back on track a little bit. They need to get the pitching figured out. They need a really good outing to start to protect and let the bullpen recover a bit. Because if they get another clunker and they're back out in the bullpen again for multiple innings, you know, from individual pitchers again, then it's going to make it that much more difficult to face the rest of the week here. So, look, there's something good about the fact that you're playing really good teams, that it can maybe elevate everybody's level of play. And this has been a resilient team. We see it during the course of games where they can come back. And I think it's the same sort of thing that when you've hit the roadblock a couple times, you can bounce back from that and get it going. And that resiliency can certainly show itself again.
Steve, you know, we've been talking the last couple of weeks about panic button for our Toronto Blue Jays, and you've sort of been the calming influence behind it, saying, you know, there's not really much time to panic right now. They're still, they got the third best record in the American League. You know, they'll figure this thing out, but they just got leapfrogged by the Boston Red Sox and now are fourth in the division and showing continued signs of struggle. The trade deadline is just a couple weeks away. Do you think there's starting to be some panic, especially entering a series now against a hot Boston Red Sox team?
Yeah, so I think that certainly the level of urgency is increased with the pitching part of it. It's not like they haven't given Kikuchi the opportunity to get it turned around. Now, whether they can go with an opener for him where the first inning's been such an issue, maybe you can do that. But, you know, then it burns out one of your relievers when you do it. And so, I do think they need to pull him back a little bit. I think that the team's not going to panic. They know they're a good team. They know they're playing some good teams. I mean, listen, there's no shame in losing in a game where it's Corbin Burns pitches against you. He was a Cy Young Award winner last year and had dominating stuff. Yet they rallied and came back in that game. They showed that resiliency for which this team is becoming famous for. So, there are other really good teams in the game. The Red Sox, I have to admit, have surprised me. They really have. I mean, they won seven in a row. Since like May 10th, they're the first or second best record in baseball behind the Yankees. And I don't see the pitching there to be able to do what they're doing to turn things around. So, you know, I'm not necessarily a huge believer in Boston, but it doesn't matter what I think. They believe in themselves because Alex Cora gets them doing that. And Tampa now pulled into a tie too. And for Tampa, it's been a bit up and down overall. But, you know, look, they're running into the Brewers this week now, Tampa Bay. So we'll see what that looks like. And the Yankees, it doesn't seem to matter who they're playing. They just keep on winning.
Steve, let's talk about the wild, wild scene yesterday between the Angels and the Mariners. And we should mention, Saturday night, the Mariners throw at Mike Trout at his head, and he narrowly avoids disaster in that respect, unlike Bryce Harper. Perhaps we'll be able to get to that in a little bit as well. But there are eight guys ejected from the game. Winker going after the entire opposition side. And Scott Servais, the manager for the Mariners, comes out and says that he thinks that the Angels had it in mind when they came to the ballpark on Sunday. They switched pitchers before the game. They had an opener basically to throw at the Seattle Mariners hitters. What do you make of the whole situation? What type of punishments could we see levied?
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty substantial punishments. I mean, you know, there was some serious, there were haymakers being thrown. J.P. Crawford was throwing forearms as shivers at guys in the pile. And I think as they further sort through the video, they're going to find even more culprits. There was some serious banging around going on. Look, I think if the Mariners didn't understand that there was a chance somebody was going to get thrown at, then they're living under a rock. You know, you throw at Mike Trout, you nearly hit him in the head. Yep. Ohtani got buzzed on a pitch, and then he hit a home run the day before. But they threw it right at Trout's head. And it was, you can't do that. And now, I don't know that was intentional. But, you know, Mike Trout said, look, if you're going to throw inside, if you can't control it, then you can't throw inside like that because you can't throw it up at somebody's head. You know, once ended up throwing behind Julio Rodriguez in the game yesterday, then he hit Winker. But Winker should have just gone down to first base and it would have resolved everything. The walking over toward the dugout part of it, I don't get. And that sort of escalated it. And then he kept yapping and he was in Phil Nevin's face in the scrum when it was all in there. And it kind of kept going for three different times during the course of it. So I thought the umpires did a good job getting that many, but there will probably be more suspensions. And I think Phil Nevin, with the changing of the pitching, might have to answer some questions about that and may get a more additional suspension over it. But I think that it could have all been settled if the umpire had kept Winker away from the Angels dugout. That would have helped. But once he lost grip of him, Winker going toward the dugout, the Angels were coming out. I don't like it for baseball. I think, you know, sometimes people like those. I don't like them because I think it takes away from the game.
I kind of like it, Steve. I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's exciting anyways. I mean,
the guy's got a broken hand, and he's the guy leading the charge.
Exactly. Yeah, he was at least punching with his left hand, not his right. So give him credit for that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a lot of forward thinking there from Rendon, no doubt. Steve, thank you so much for doing this. We'll chat with you on Thursday morning.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. That's our MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. Yeah, we didn't get to the Bryce Harper situation. Ian Snell buzzes him inside right on the thumb. Done. On the injured list.
Thumb.
Who knows how long he'll be out, and he's one of the best players in baseball. We know that. And
how about the Yankees getting
I was
going to
say,
hit?
I mean, 16 and a third straight innings for the Yankees without a hit. That's the longest since 1961. And yet they are able to, like, it was Giancarlo Stanton who hits a homer, DJ LeMay who hits a homer, and Aaron Judge homers in extras, and the Yankees are able to split with the Astros in spite of 16 and a third hitless innings. You don't see that often, but you do see it from the best team in baseball. The Morning Scroll coming up on the other side. Plus, we need to talk about the featured group at Rattlesnake on Saturday morning and a performance by yours truly that will go down in the record books at Rattlesnake Golf Club.
Yeah, sure was.
I don't know about that, but...
hell of a performance.
I got sandbagged. I got sandbagged. We'll tell you about it next. Time now for the Morning Scroll, where we welcome in our producer, Arad Asvandi, into the conversation. Arad, you would have been very pleased for me on Saturday morning. I go out with Carlo and his boys at Rattlesnake, Scott and Derek, friends of the show, and I put on a short game exhibition. I was like Xander Schauffele out there, not a career low, one of my best rounds, a 75 at Rattlesnake.
My nickname for him is Mr. Chips.
Congratulations to me. It was Mr. Putts, though, on Saturday,
you
Coco.
Were Mr.
You can
Putts.
Agree. I rolled in some bombs from long range. I was Steph Curry out there against the Boston Celtics. And I was
glorious
day. Thank you for having me out, Coco. It was a true treat.
Are you kidding me, man? I've been telling you for months to come out and play with us.
Come
out and play. It's like the tagline from Golf Town.
That's right. All right, that applies to Arad. Come out and share your thoughts on the Morning Scroll.
I just want to say, first of all, happy for both of you gentlemen. It's good to see Team First Up doing well on the links.
Yeah.
So keep that up.
We're ready for J-Mac and James Duffy. It's on this year, buddy.
It's on. And
all right. It's over for those guys.
Let's see. I'm trying an Aaron Korolnik transition here. Let's see how I do. You know who else did well on the grass? Alex Ovechkin, after signing a one-day contract.
It's a Mark Rowe. It really is a Mark Rowe thing. Mark Rowe is the king. I just try to do my best.
King of segues.
King of segues,
But Alex Ovechkin, what a viral. What a video that went viral. This guy signed a one-day contract with Dynamo Moscow. Correct me if I'm wrong, Arad. Was this an exhibition game or was this a regular season game?
No, it was an exhibition game.
Okay.
Russia plays the opposite of the rest of Europe when it comes to soccer, obviously because of their weather. They play in the summer versus the winter. So Dynamo Moscow is, you know, getting ready for the season. And Ovechkin, a Dynamo Moscow alumni, right, when he used to play before he came to the NHL, signed a one-day deal with them. And there were a couple of highlights, Coco.
Dude. So first of all, we obviously got to acknowledge the fact that this guy scores goals in every sport that he plays in, because he played in that game and scored a goal in soccer. But I think the best thing that I loved the most was when he body checked that guy that was half his size running down the field with the ball. Like, this guy's a specimen, man. Like, why would you go play a soccer game? Aren't you worried about, like, tearing an ACL or pulling a hamstring? This guy, no. Just give him some Russian vodka, and he's ready to go, man.
He also looked so big relative to the rest of the players. It was like he was playing against school children. Like, it's like if I was playing against seven-year-olds on the pitch, that's the equivalent. Because Ovechkin is what? Probably 6'1", 6'2", 240 pounds?
According to SportsCenter last night, 6'3", 250.
6'3", 250? Jeez.
What? And he looked every inch and pound of that, but it's not like he looks big when he's on the ice against the NHL guys, but I mean, when he's on the pitch, he looks like a different species,
right? Well, because these soccer players are all like fit and skinny, and like these they're on the cardio program, like the running program. He's built like a hockey player, this guy.
He is a hockey player. 20 fingers has the call of the goal, I guess, on the Russian radio network. Let's take a listen.
Идет, чтобы выйти потом. И, может быть, сейчас будет тот самый момент. Первый шаг!
the much. Like, what are the other guys in the team thinking that this guy's dressing up in an exhibition game and just, like, comes out and just does what he does in hockey, just scores goals? It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Now, did he play the whole game or just a couple of shifts?
He played the first half. So first the equivalent half. Of a couple of shifts, yes.
Wow. It's still a pretty cool moment to see that guy. He's the man that does it all, man.
Exactly. Not exactly an unprecedented moment. We've seen super fan athletes be with their team before, notably like Usain Bolt, big Manchester United fan, played a couple games overseas for Manchester United. So, you know, always good to see other athletes use their luxuries and play some soccer. Yes, thank you, Coco, bailed me out there. Another man doing the same thing, I guess, filling in for another sport and testing his hand at a new venture was Raptors head coach Nick Nurse. He performed at the Toronto Jazz Festival this weekend, and Nick Nurse got to play guitar with the New Power Generation, the backing band for Prince for many years.
Wow.
And he got on stage and played Purple Rain with them.
Actually, not a new venture at all for Nick Nurse, because he did the same with Arkells a couple of years ago. I was in attendance for that when Nick Nurse came out, and my buddy Zach almost fainted. I remember being on the lawn at the Molson Amphitheater, and the Raptors had just won the title, and we were all still probably hungover from celebrating it. And when Nick Nurse came out, oh, what a moment that was. This guy shreds on guitar, and I'm sure he did the same. And this guy is like tight with all the guys from the Arkells, and he puts on a show, not only on the basketball court, but on stage as well.
Love it. Thanks. We have Brian Hayes joining us at, what, 8 o'clock?
7:30, Brian Hayes.
7:30. Yes.
Love it. Thanks.
And all right, well, that concludes the morning scroll. I believe we're up against the clock here. We've got to be on time. That's our MO here on First Up. So we'll bring a Rod back a little bit later. And, I mean, there's so much to get to this morning, Coco. You've got the Sahith Theegala story.
Oh, Jesus.
At the Travelers, which I know was of extreme pain to you and to anyone watching, because that dude choked so hard on 18, hits driver into the fairway bunker and basically tops it out of the bunker into the lip and back into the bunker, makes double bogey, loses by two. Xander Schauffele wins his sixth PGA Tour event, and it's not even remotely a story. It's the Sahith Theegala choke job, which is the top of the golf world.
Mito Pereira
did
it.
I think this was way worse than Mito Pereira. And I understand Mito was in a major, but Sahith, you got to be able to get out of the fairway bunker, man. Come on. And they think about the 18th hole at, I forget what golf course the PGA was at now, but way more difficult. That's a short par four. And on 18 at the Travelers, an embarrassing move from Sahith. Something he'll be thinking about quite a bit. Still
something
made like
I'll
600
be thinking
grand.
About for a long time.
Well,
too.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll get back into that story a little bit later. Maybe with Brian Hayes, who has told stories of his own about his struggles on the 18th tee. So he could probably empathize with Sahith this morning. And Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider at 8 o'clock. The second hour, First Up, on the way next. This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped.